Outfielder step to the right, the pitch. Swing and a line drive left field. Benintendi coming on, dives. And did he make the catch? He did. He got it.
The Red Sox win.
The Red Sox
win.
As
I just went head over heels in my chair.
Joe just fell down.
Oh, wow. What a catch.
Kimbrel deals. Bregman in the air. Left field. Benintendi dives. And he makes the catch. Oh, what a play. Game saver. Andrew Benintendi. The Red Sox win on a spectacular catch by Benintendi in left field.
Wow. What a way to end a baseball game earlier this morning. Wow. I didn't see it. I've seen on the highlights today. I got to get up early to do a show. And I do have a criticism, Major League Baseball, and that is we have to start limiting pitching changes. Because all these pitching changes, and then they don't even worry about the clock to speed up the pace of play once you get to the playoffs. That rule just goes out the window. And you have a game start at 8, and it doesn't end until, what, 12:15? Which, that's actually a decent sped game in the playoffs, the way this has been going. I mean, it's after midnight. I'm not staying up that late to watch that game if I got to get up early the next morning. I'm too old for that. So I'll just have to, you know, watch the highlights, even though I really wish I would have seen this. But it's unfortunate that's what happens. But it is what it is. And Benintendi with a game-winning catch. It was 8-6 Red Sox, bases loaded. If that ball drops, the Astros tie the game and perhaps win the game and then even the series at 2. That catch may have just determined who wins that series.
It goes a long way into it, yeah. I mean, you guys, as an Astro fan, you guys be sick to your stomach when you see the ball going, and you're like, oh, yeah, and then he dives and catches it, and, like, just heart drops to your stomach. I mean, what do you do?
If he misses that ball and it gets by him, the game's over.
Oh, it is.
And if he misses it and keeps in front of him, it still might be enough with the runners going in motion on contact with two outs.
Yeah.
Maybe they could have scored the guy from first. Maybe. I doubt it, but
they would have tied it.
Well, I know third and second. Yeah, tied it. I'm talking to win the game.
Yeah,
from first.
If it's in front of them, there's no question they tie it. But you know, it's like
right.
They,
but I'm talking the guy from first. Does he come all the way because he's running on contact?
Yeah.
Because you run as hard as you can. Because if you run it out, whether it's caught or not.
Yeah.
Because it's two outs. I doubt it. But still, I mean, that was how big that catch was. But there was a big play, just as big early in the game. And that was a Houston Astro fan called for fan interference on a Jose Altuve. Look what was going to be a two-run home run that would have tied the game in the first inning. The Red Sox got two early, top of the first. The Astros chanced to tie it in the bottom of the first, and it looked like they had. But instead, Joe West, who's not liked by a lot of people, umpire's been in it for a long time, he called fan interference. And I've watched the replays, and he made the right call because Betts, it looked like, was going to catch it. And the fan, who, I mean, honestly, I don't think the fan did anything really wrong. I mean, you're just reacting. You're not really, like, really going over into the field of play. You're reaching across to catch a ball. It's instinct. It's reaction. I don't think he was kicked out of the game. But the glove comes up, and it runs into his arm. His arm runs into the glove. It closes the glove, and the ball goes over the glove of Betts by a couple of inches and into the stands. And it's safe to say, if the fan doesn't have his arm hit the glove of Betts, then that glove's going to continue to ascend higher because he was jumping. And so I think he would have caught it. And who knows, maybe he would have just brought it back in and it would have been a single or a double. But we'll never know. It was called fan interference. They replayed it. It wasn't a challengeable play, but they still reviewed it, which is good, with replay. And there was nothing to overturn the call. It stood as called. So there's nothing definitive to say. You know, if Joe West didn't call fan interference, it would have been a two-run homer.
Yeah.
But he called fan interference. I've seen the replays over and over. Ron Darling on the TV call said he thought it was right, and he was going to catch that ball. It looked to me like Betts was going to catch the ball too. So it looked to be the right call. So if we assume Betts is going to catch the ball anyway, then it's really not a big deal. But if you believe Betts wasn't going to catch the ball and you're an Astros fan, you're going to see it in your colored glasses without question.
Yeah.
You're not going to be very happy with that because that would have tied the game. So here's A.J. Hinch, the manager of the Astros, on fan interference called in the first inning that took away two runs from his team.
They deemed the fan reached over into the field of play and interfered with Betts. And Jose pays the biggest price because the trajectory of the ball looked like it was going to leave the ballpark. But we assume, and you can assume a lot with Mookie because he's an incredible athlete, we assume he's going to make this spectacular catch, jumping as high as he can into the crowd. I asked for a review, and obviously they're going to give it to us. And they reviewed it and came back with the same outcome. So once the fan reaches in, you know, past that line of the fence, we're going to penalize hitters every time. And so, you know, change that whole inning.
Of course, he's a little bitter. I get it. But to me, that was the right call. And I'm actually cheering for the Astros. So I don't like the call went against him. But to me, objectively, that was the right call. It looked like Betts was going to catch it. Here's Betts on the fan interference.
I was just kind of going back. I got a good jump on it. And I was pretty positive I was going to be able to catch it. You know, but as I jumped and went over, reached my hand up, I felt like somebody was kind of pushing my glove, you know, out of the way or something. And, you know, I got to see a little bit of the replay. And I guess they were going to catch the ball and push my glove out of the way. So I didn't know it was called an out. That's why I got it and threw it home. But I guess he got the call right.
So the Astros down 3-1. Alex Cora says this series isn't over, even though his team, the Red Sox, lead 3-1.
We know we were 3-1, but they're a good team. They came back last year against the Yankees. They lost Game 6 of the World Series in Dodger Stadium, and they won in Game 7. So it's not over. We know that. But to have a chance, you know, to finish tomorrow, that's always good. We're just going to show up tomorrow, get the information, play hard, and see what happens.
I never dreamt the Red Sox could win all 3 games at Houston. I thought they'd be lucky to get 1. Now they have a chance to get all 3 and not even go back to Boston for Game 6. Wow. And no Chris Sale Game 5. So the Red Sox would have Sale in Boston Game 6 if they need him. So it's interesting. Red Sox up 3-1. A couple things went against the Astros last night. A great catch by the Red Sox left fielder Benintendi. Robbed him of a couple of runs and then robbed him a couple of runs because of their own fan, who I don't really blame. He was just trying to catch a ball like you do as a fan. So...
Yeah, did you hear Altuve after the game? He's like, I don't blame the fan. He's like, what would you do if you were in that situation? He's like, you'd try to catch the ball, too, if it was coming at you. Home run in the postseason, basically, is what he's trying to say.
It's like, just react.
I don't blame the fan for that.
No, not at all. And he didn't, like, way overreach into the field of play. So a little bit of a controversy to it all. I think the ump in that case got it right, but Astro fans probably don't want to hear that. And we'll talk about the National League Series coming up here in just a moment. But we begin with local sports. Sub-state volleyball brackets have been released. Let's go over those.
Yes, looking at, we have 4 immediate area teams that are still alive. Class 3A Beloit's at the Phillipsburg Sub-State. They're the #1 seed at 31-4. This Sub-State, 7 of the 8 teams that are in it have winning records. So obviously there's going to be some talent here. The 8 seed is Russell that doesn't have a winning record. They're 13-22. Again, Beloit against Russell will be at 1:00 coming up on Saturday afternoon in Phillipsburg. They're playing this Sub-State on one court. 4-5 matchup, Colby Norton. 2-7 is Phillipsburg against TMP. And then the 3-6 game, or match, I should say, is Minneapolis against Concordia in Class 3A. 1A in Centralia, Sub-State #1 is where St. John's Tipton will be competing as they take on #2 seed Rural Vista, who's 36-4. Bloody Jays are 30-8. That's 1:00 start time there for that first semifinal of Sub-State 1. Second semifinal has Frankfort against Valley Falls, and then those 2 winners will play for the championship on Saturday afternoon in Centralia. 1A at Western Plains, hosted there in Ransom. Thunder Ridge will play in Sub-State #2. They're the #1 seed with a 33-3 record. They play at 5:00 on Saturday evening against Dighton, who's 22-11. And then on the bottom side of that bracket, it's Rollins County, the 4 seed against Otis Bison. And again, the winners will play in the championship match there later on Saturday evening in Ransom in that 1A Sub-State. Then in Class 2A, Smith Center, the #1 seed at 32-5 against Ellis, the 8 seed, who's 6-24. They'll play that on 2 courts. Smith Center starts at 2:00 on the East Court there in Plainville. Then the 4-5 matchup on the East Court following that will be Ness City in Plainville. And then on the bottom side of the bracket, Trigo takes on Oakley at 2 on the West Court. And then after that will be Hoxie against Oberlin. Again, that's the 2A Sub-State on Saturday at Plainville. The full brackets can be found online at ncksports.com for all the state Sub-State tournaments, I should say, in the state of Kansas.
And you mentioned locker room chats?
I have not yet. Okay. Locker room chats are tonight. St. John's Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, Sylvan Lucas are the coaches we'll talk to this evening, and those will begin a little after 5:10 this evening, so stay tuned for that, and also be posted on our podcast later this evening as well at katycountry94.com.
High school football tomorrow night. It will be Thunder Ridge at Osborne on Katy Country 94, St. John's Tipton, Rock Hills on Z96.3 Lake, Beloit at Russell, live video stream at nckfsports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. Back to the volleyball for a quick moment. Smith Center, I think, would have a good chance of making state. Beloit certainly has a chance, but that's a tough substate. 7 to 8 teams have winning records, and I think Colby's a dangerous team there as a 4 seed. And then the Minneapolis Concordia winner, they'll cancel one another out. So one of those teams, I think, will probably move on maybe to the finals as well. You've got defending state champion TMP in that bracket. So even though Beloit's the only state-ranked team in that 3A substate at Phillipsburg, it will not be an easy road. And if you're going to make state, you probably have to earn it, you know.
You
got to play some tough teams. So if Beloit plays like they did against Teston a few weeks ago, I think they'll be just fine. They play like they did at Concordia tournament, from what everybody's told me, then they're not going to make it. So it's just a matter of which, you know, are you going to bring your best? Are you going to play your best? And that applies to any team at this stage of the season, no matter what the sport is.
Yeah.
But
in volleyball, that's that. It's so magnified because it's one day.
Yeah.
You know, you're coming, you know, sub-state basketball, you got the week. You know, you struggle a bit in that first round game. You can tweak some things and get yourself back up for the next game. But, man, it's one day in volleyball, and if you're not there and you don't have it that day.
Because you can try to prep for your opponents, but you only know your first-round opponent.
Yeah.
And then you don't know who your semifinal opponent is, and then you don't know who your opponent in the finals. You can try to anticipate. But if you look too far ahead and then you get bit, and then your season's over.
In a substate like this, like we said, 7 out of 8
you look ahead
winning
to,
records, you don't know who you're going to be.
If Beloit looks ahead to Minneapolis or Concordia in the finals, look out, because there's Colby up there and Norton. I mean, you just got to take care of business. So it'll be interesting. And Thunder Ridge is going to have a tough road to try to get to state. But hey, once again, if you can get to state, you got to beat the best to get to the best, right?
Exactly.
So I would say Thunder Ridge, Smith Center, and Beloit have the best chances. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, St. John's Tipton's definitely got an uphill climb in there. It's just looking at everybody. It's good that they avoided the Centralia part.
Yeah.
They don't have to play them, but everybody in that substate is.
Yeah.
It's a stacked substate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. St. John's Tipton barely got by Lincoln. That was.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a little bit surprising. I mean, they were, what? They had match points against them where their season was over.
In the second set, yeah.
And give them credit
for
coming
back. Save both of them, yeah. Yep.
And then you feel for Lincoln from the standpoint that they were that close, and then and then their season
ends.
And that's
another one of those deals. You know, it's just this is one day. They dominated Lincoln on Saturday at the MPL tournament for third place. And lost the first set and nearly lost the second.
We see this in sports all the time at every level, pro, college, high school, whatever, is that the team that is favored, there's more pressure on them as they go into like a sub-state tournament, a regional tournament, or a state tournament, or whatever it may be. There's just more pressure.
Yeah.
They maybe don't play as relaxed as teams. They're like, hey, we got blown out Saturday. What? We got nothing to lose.
Exactly.
And next thing you know, you've got them on the ropes.
Yeah.
So good luck to all the area volleyball teams up at Substate this weekend. And if we'll try to cover, hopefully we'll have some state volleyball to cover next Friday and Saturday. Okay, back to the Major League Baseball playoffs. We mentioned the Red Sox winning last night 8-6. And game 5 of that series will be tonight at 7:09 on TBS. Justin Verlander, who's their best pitcher, against David Price, who's on 3 days rest. So we can just automatically figure this is going back to Boston, right? Price never wins a start. Verlander's automatic. Watch the Red Sox blow him out or something crazy like that. That's why they play the game. Game 6 of the NLCS is tomorrow, the Dodgers at the Brewers. That's at 7:39 on FS1. Wade Miley starting again, more on that in a moment, against the Dodgers' Rio. And the Dodgers have a chance to close it out in Milwaukee. Milwaukee takes care of home field advantage. They will move on to the World Series. They just got to win games 6 and 7 at home. And a much-needed day off, really, for both bullpens. And let's go back to the Brewers game against the Dodgers last night. Wade Miley was the starting pitcher. He threw 5 pitches, and he was pulled. He was not hurt. It was the grand plan of Craig Counsell, the Brewers manager. They wanted to try to dictate to the Dodgers that they would go with all-righty lineup and then make a change. Well, the Dodgers didn't exactly go full forward with that plan. They had a couple lefties in their lineup. So Miley walks the leadoff man, and he's out. He threw more warm-up pitches than he did actual pitches in the game. He started game 5. He will now start game 6. And I believe it's the first time since 1920s that a pitcher has started back-to-back, actually since 1930, back-to-back games. That's how it's going to be. And you think about game four, the Brewers lost. Gio Gonzalez sprained his ankle and came out in the second inning. So the Brewers are using a lot of bullpen guys. Yeah. Now they've kind of got Woodruff. He's kind of a starter slash, you know, long inning guy. And last night he came in, pitched five and a third, and kept the Brewers in it. But this is isn't that taking the opener a little bit extra far? Hey, I got to throw five pitches. Okay, you're done.
Yeah.
Hit the showers, Wade Miley. Get ready to start the next game. It's like, why bother? But the thought was to try to force the Dodgers into a certain lineup, and then they'd have to make decisions, the Dodgers, to change in their lineup, pinch hitters, this and that. And it, quite honestly, it didn't work.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, part of the reason it didn't work is Clayton Kershaw was Clayton Kershaw last night. Dodgers win, and they're up 3-2 in that series. Here's Craig Counsell on putting in Woodruff after five pitches by Wade Miley.
Well, look, you know, they're trying to get matchups. We're trying to get matchups. They're a very tough team to get matchups against. And we were able to get Woody some matchups.
But they did lose. And Council talks about the great opportunity going back to Milwaukee. Down 3-2, but the last two games of the series are at home.
Look, we're going back home, to me, in a position of strength. And that, you know, that's part of it. We're sitting in a very good spot, to me, going home for game six. We have a great opportunity. We've got, you know, two starters lined up, and we've got a bullpen that's, you know, going to get a day off, and some of our key guys are going to get multiple days off and be ready to go into a two-game stretch where we can, you know, we can use them.
Well, to me, this series changed in game four, just like the Red Sox-Astros series was won, I think, last night with Benintendi's catch in the ninth inning. And I think of Bellinger's great catch in game four. And then, of course, the walk-off hit in the 13th where the Brewers use all their weapons in the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowed, I think, the Dodgers to have a great opportunity and have a big advantage going into game five yesterday. And Justin Turner, who is Mr. October himself for the Dodgers, coming through again yesterday.
A 1-2. Line drive, base hit into center field. Kershaw will score. Bellinger will hold at third. Throw comes all the way into the plate, and Turner goes to second. And the Dodgers lead 4-1.
Dodgers go on to win at 5-2, up 3-2, but the next two are in Milwaukee. Okay, Big 12 basketball preseason honors have been released. I love how Big12Sports.com, the preseason all Big 12 awards. Should you give awards before the year begins? Seems kind of silly. It's like, hey, junior high basketball starts. Let's go ahead and give the award for the best shooting forward to. Dean Wade is your preseason player of the year. It means nothing other than you're getting accolades. Yeah. It means you're respected. He was the only unanimous choice for the all Big 12 first team preseason. He is picked as a player of the year. Dedrick Lawson of KU, the newcomer of the year. He could end up being the player of the year. Quentin Grimes, the freshman of the year. Preseason All-Big 12 team, Lindell Wigginton of Iowa State, Dedrick Lawson of KU, Barry Brown and Dean Wade of K-State. There's respect. And Kanate of West Virginia rounds out the five. Honorable mention, Quentin Grimes of KU and Udoka Azubuike for KU. So Dedrick Lawson is highly thought of and has yet to play a game for the University of Kansas. Of course, Quentin Grimes highly thought of as well, as the Jayhawks are the favorite to win. What would it be? I'm losing track. 15 in a row now, I think it would be. After a while, you just like same old.
Yeah.
I think it's 15 they're going for now. And they're certainly one of the top teams in America, according to many, with what they have. Now, the question going to be, will they have any kind of violations slapped upon them by the NCAA? Oh, man, this thing. I don't really like this stuff because, one, it's legal. I'm not an expert on law, per se. I mean, I know that if you run a stop sign and a cop catches you, you broke the law. I know if you speed, you break the law, but I really don't know about all this other stuff that's taking place in this college corruption basketball trial in New York. But I can tell you that there was some evidence that was not allowed into the trial, but it was allowed to be read, which I don't quite understand. Anyway, an FBI recording of a phone call between KU assistant coach Curtis Townsend and former amateur coach Merle Code, which was not allowed as evidence in the trial in which Code is a defendant, shows that Townsend allegedly tried to find an occupational opportunity for a family member of Zion Williamson, a high-profile recruit who now plays at Duke. According to Code's lawyer, Townsend said, "I've got to just try to work and figure out a way, because if that's what it takes to get him here for 10 months, we're going to have to do it some way." End of quote. I will say this. That doesn't convict Curtis Townsend on anything. There's nothing mentioned about payments. But it does kind of show that you're aware there's something going on. And the court of public perception, that does not look good for the University of Kansas. And especially for Curtis Townsend, who is considered the nicest guy probably in that entire coaching staff. So you can draw your conclusions and you can speculate what KU staff and many other staffs across the country have done. But is there enough there to say, oh, Curtis Townsend has to be let go by the University of Kansas? I'd say no, there isn't. Unless Kansas doesn't, they want to distance themselves from Curtis Townsend.
Yeah.
Or if they think this is smoke and there's more fire to come, maybe they would do that. In regards to the NCAA coming down with violations on Kansas, slapping them with code violations, there's this long article on KUSports.com, and there's a legal analyst that says, "I have doubts, despite all of this information in this trial, I have doubts the NCAA is truly going to punish these schools. I might be cynical about it, but I don't think it's going to happen." He also says, "We have to be honest here. Does the NCAA have the stomach to dish out major sanctions to 15 or 20 basketball schools, which are all major players, and what is their biggest cash cow?" That's a good question. He believes Louisville could have received the NCAA's death penalty, which would ban a team from participating in the sport, for its recruiting scandal prior to the FBI investigation, but instead received a fine and a vacation of wins, including their 2013 championship. Listen, if you don't give Baylor any kind of major penalties, the NCAA is toothless. They're not going to, I mean, and some of the things they do hand out, it's like, really? You're going to come down on this part, but you're not going to come down on that part? There is a lot that could come out of this trial yet. There could be really nothing other than, hey, all along, the trial has been set up as KU and other schools are victims. That's the term used, victims. Some people laugh at that. But that's how the trial is being presented, is KU, Maryland, all these schools are victims, and that the shoe companies are the guilty parties. And then, of course, to me, I still think the players are victims if they didn't know their guardians were getting money. So will anything really happen to Maryland or Oregon or Kansas? Or, to me, this points out, Zion Williamson went to Duke. What did Duke give Williamson to come to Duke? What has Calipari and Kentucky given to bring all these one-and-dones? Because that's what we're looking at mostly, is the one-and-done situation, which is another problem which the NCAA helped create. And I think that's another reason why the NCAA is not going to really come down with full enforcement on this whole thing, because this is a federal investigation. It's not an NCAA investigation. Yeah. So I just don't think a lot's going to happen here. I really don't.
It's a federal investigation, but if even half of this is true, there's plenty of NCAA regulations that are being broken there, you know, some of the rules that they have. But I'm in agreeance with you and whoever wrote this story here that there's a lot of stuff going on, but probably nothing's going to happen. If this was going on at Florida Atlantic, you know, someplace like that,
they'd probably get a big-time penalty.
They would. They'd be banned from postseason. They'd have to pay the fine that Louisville paid. They'd have to vacate wins. They'd get as close to the death penalty as you probably could without getting it.
Probably so.
But it's not at Florida Atlantic. It's at Kansas. It's at, you know, the schools that you mentioned there. Teams and programs that have had a lot of success. And let's face it, are the cash cow for the NCAA when it comes tournament time. Mm-hmm. And so what are you going to do? You're going to take the money away that you're going to gain by having Kansas and their brand prominent there toward the end of the season? No, you're not going to do that. So it's the same reason you don't have Louisville being banned from postseason right now. And it's easy to vacate wins, okay?
Yeah.
What does that even really mean?
We still saw it with our own eyes.
Everybody saw Memphis play in the Final Four and in the championship against KU.
Yes.
I saw it with my own eyes. You can vacate the wins all you want. It happened.
I saw Wichita State lose to Louisville in the Final Four. Okay?
Yeah, exactly. It happened.
Yes. I agree with you. Does anybody really think anything differently of Michigan when the Fab Five had to vacate all that stuff?
No.
There's just no banners hanging up in the arena, but everybody remembers Chris Webber and Jalen Rose and Ray Jackson and all those guys, Juwan Howard. I mean, come on. I agree with you. I don't think it's that big a deal other than you just can't hang up the banners and you don't put it in the official record book. Now, you know, 50 years from now when kids that haven't been born, they won't know that. They'll look at the stats and go, well, Michigan never won anything that year.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is ridiculous. It really is. It is ridiculous. And I'm not... As Rick Barnes, he had an interesting comment yesterday, and I should have retweeted it so I go back and refer to it. But he said, listen, this has been going on for 60 years. He said, coaches cheat. He said, I can tell you right now, there are more coaches that don't cheat than do cheat. He said, and every coach has their right to go about it the way they want. He goes, I'm going to tell you right now, if anybody gets caught cheating here, that isn't going to stop people from cheating.
Yeah.
Because if they're going to cheat, they want to cheat, they're going to cheat. And he said, so you have to decide in what direction you want to go. What players are you going after? And if you choose to not, he made a really good point, Rick Barnes, who's now the head coach of Tennessee, used to be the coach at Texas. He said, listen, when you go on recruiting trips and you talk to players, you can find out fairly quickly what's going on. And then you have to decide whether or not you want to be involved in that, or if you go ahead and step aside and go focus on other kids where that's not an issue. And I will say this, as much as Bruce Weber is criticized for not getting the greatest talent to K-State or Southern Illinois or Illinois or whatever else, I don't think a lot of people think that Bruce Weber cheats. Bruce Weber, maybe people wish he kind of pushed the envelope or even stepped over a little bit and barely cheated, but you're still cheating. Bruce Weber runs a clean program as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not result in national championship appearances and Final Fours on a regular basis or conference titles. But if there was ever a major hardline fist put down by the NCAA, K-State would benefit because odds are Kansas would be punished. So the question and what stinks for those that don't cheat is when you see guys that do cheat and they get a slap on the wrist. And we don't know for sure KU's cheating, by the way. I'm just throwing it out there. But K-State fans, I'm sure, believe they do. Then you sit here and go, well, if you don't get busted and get in trouble for cheating, then that kind of promotes it's okay to cheat. And that would apply to your junior, when you're in school, fifth grade.
Yeah.
And you copy answers from a friend on a test. And if there's no consequences, then the kid thinks, oh, it's okay to cheat. But if you come down on
one,
if you come
stop.
And you don't, you're right, you're going to keep doing it. But if you come down hard on the person that cheats, they're going to think twice before they cheat again. Will they cheat again? Maybe. Maybe they won't. But the kid that doesn't cheat and does it the right way, who gave the answers to this kid to help him out, which I say, if you're smart, don't give the answers to anybody else so you're not involved because you're the one that got all the right answers. So why do you need to help somebody out? But you're being nice. Sometimes those kids get in much trouble sharing the answers than the ones that took the
answers.
Sometimes
more.
Yes.
You know, I've seen situations.
How messed up is that?
It's not their fault. It's your fault for being that guy and sharing.
Right. It's like.
Okay, sorry.
It's messed up. And it's kind of, that's a good analogy to compare here to college basketball and what's happening. And I just don't think a lot's going to come out of it. I really don't.
I don't either.
So I think it's a lot to do about nothing. But maybe some shoe execs will get jailed. And if you think it's just Adidas, by the way, you're naive because there have already been three Nike coaches and Under Armour coach that were the four coaches involved before last season when this broke. They weren't, none of them were Adidas at that time.
Yeah.
So you know it happens with the other shoe companies. You know Duke's involved. You know Kansas is involved in some way or another. And you know that Kentucky's involved. And, you know, Tad Boyle, who's a former KU player, and he is a coach of Colorado. Remember last year when they beat, was it UCLA or USC? USC and UCLA have been known to go out and do some shady things. Think of O.J. Mayo for USC back in the day. And Tad Boyle, you know, I wish I had the comment right here, but he just flat out, they super enjoyed sticking it. So I think it was USC in basketball. They didn't mind running up the score, doing this or that or whatever else because He's like, we do it the right way and they don't. You know, and he basically was saying, hey, these coaches are crooked. And I can understand that frustration. You know, Sean Miller has what? He was one game? DeAndre Ayton was still allowed to play.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't take anything from DeAndre Ayton now. You can do something to the school. Sean Miller's still the coach. If nothing happened there, which apparently they can't connect all the dots, I don't know, then why is something going to happen here unless you have direct, solid evidence? Showing like SMU back in the day, the handwritten notes. Dickerson, $100,000.
I got a ledger right here that says everything we did.
Right. So unless you have that, I just don't know how these programs are really going to get a serious consequence.
No.
So it'll keep happening, as Rick Barnes says.